This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
I have with me today Susan Glasser and Jeff Toobin, both staff writers for The New Yorker, who have been covering this story in one way or another for years now. It almost seems like decades. And Susan, when you listen to Adam run us through the facts, where do you come down on the crucial question of the President of the United States' involvement here? What is the likely outcome where that's concerned?
You know, I was struck by a couple things in Adam's excellent report. First of all, I think it's important to keep in mind, what did Vladimir Putin and Russia want from Donald Trump and want from the United States throughout this period? And because I think that starts to answer in a very specific way why there was a Russian intelligence operation, according to all the U.S. intelligence agencies, to manipulate and affect the 2016 election, not simply to cause chaos, as some people have reported, but on Donald Trump's behalf. They wanted something very specific: sanctions relief. Russia took over Crimea in 2014, invaded its neighbor Ukraine. That's a conflict that continues to today. As a result of that, there are these fairly stringent sanctions on Russia, and I believe that was what they talked about at the Trump Tower meeting. And I think the record is very likely to show that Trump was privately as well as publicly receptive to the idea that he was receiving some support from the Russians, and in exchange was willing to consider lifting these sanctions.
Susan, there's been a lot of concern that William Barr, the president's nominee for attorney general, will not in the end even release Mueller's findings, or it might have to go through the attorney general and he'll issue some kind of version or summary of it. What do you expect us to actually get when the Mueller investigation is over? What will we receive? Will it be leaked? And will we find out everything we want to?
It's not at all clear is the answer, because we have not had a situation that exactly mirrors this one. There's no set law or template that applies to this. But I think most people believe that there's really no way to fully cover this up at this point, and that the information one way or the other is going to come out. And I think that is a reasonable expectation.
Jeff, you agree?
Mostly. I've been burned so many times saying, well, Donald Trump can't possibly do X, and then he does X. So the idea that the Trump administration would use concepts like classified information, executive privilege, the existence of pending investigations to limit the disclosure in Mueller's report is not out of the question to me. And even though it's true that even some Republicans, as well as virtually all Democrats, have said they think Mueller's report should be made public, you know, more or less in its entirety, if Barr says no, what are they going to do about it?
They'll leak it.
What's their remedy?
They'll leak it. You've got bipartisan legislation that's put forth by Chuck Grassley, who is not exactly a man of the left, and Richard Blumenthal, who's a Democrat, obviously, that requires the final report be submitted to Congress and the public. Now, that may not pass, But it gives you some sense of the inclination to, at the very least, leak it.
Well, there could also be a Supreme Court fight over it, which would really put us in echoes of Watergate territory. And arguably, it was Nixon's fight over the release of the tapes. And when it finally got to the Supreme Court and involved all three branches of government, that was really, you know, the beginning of the end game for him.
Now, the president's numbers, all kinds of numbers, have been eroding and eroding. They're all his negatives are much higher than his positives. His core, even his core base has kind of gotten to a 30% level. That's no way to win an election. And the election campaign has begun. Assuming he gets past these investigations in the House, assuming he gets past the Mueller report, he'll be damaged in many ways. We're already seeing candidates come out on the Democratic side, and we even hear about the possibility of a Republican challenging the president in his own party. What are Donald Trump's election prospects?
Well, first of all, I think you're right to spotlight the possibility of a Republican challenge, even if it's not successful. Recent history suggests this is the one fairly surefire way in which incumbent presidents lose re-election is when they are weakened from within in their own party. Obviously, that was the story of Jimmy Carter in 1980, beaten up by Ted Kennedy, even though Kennedy didn't win, and goes on to lose to Ronald Reagan. George H.W. Bush had the Pat Buchanan insurgency from within his party. It becomes a one-term president. Or you could have an LBJ-like scenario in 1968, where the president chose not to run again while facing increasing discord and division from within his own party. I think both of those are real scenarios.
Jeff, same question.
Well, I just, you know, given my credentials as someone who was disastrously and totally wrong about the 2016
I don't think you were
election.
Alone in that. I don't think
I wasn't alone, but I was. I think reports of Donald Trump's political death have been greatly exaggerated. I think his poll numbers, while somewhat weaker, I think the real story is how little they've changed, not how much they've changed.
I mean, I strongly agree with that.
The day he took office, after a election in which you'll recall he won, his popularity was roughly 40%. It's been as high as 45. It's been down to 40, 35. But I mean, it's depending on which poll, it really hasn't changed that much. And that's, it was enough to win. As for the Democrats, I mean, I suppose the good news is there's no one candidate who is his target who he can, start chanting, lock him or her up. The bad news is there's no candidate. So the idea that Donald Trump is going to lose to some miscellaneous person whose identity we have no idea about who it is, I just think, most presidents get reelected.
Is the drama of the possibility of Mueller getting fired by Trump now over, do you think?
Yes. I really think the odds of him being dismissed are essentially zero. Now, release of the report, that's a different story, and we've discussed the complexity there. But Mueller is going to be allowed to finish this investigation. I have no doubt about that.
Jeff, Democratic leaders have been reluctant to talk about impeachment, although some rank-and-file members have more than colorfully called for it. What do you believe Mueller has to find in order to trigger that impeachment? I ask that to both of you. Jeff first.
Well, something that is significantly beyond and different from the known facts of the investigation and significantly worse than anything that has even been hypothesized so far. And, when I did that piece, when I talked to Nancy Pelosi, and when I talked to Jerry Nadler, who's now the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, they were really categorical in saying, we are not going to push impeachment unless we are reasonably certain there will be 67 votes in the Senate in other words, a substantial number of Republican votes in the Senate to remove Trump from office. Nothing that is currently on the table in terms of the Mueller investigation will come close to generating that sort of consensus for Trump's removal from office.
I mean, so what? But what are we talking about? We have to there has to be canceled checks between the Kremlin and the Trump campaign.
Effectively, yes.
That obstruction of justice, which would send other people to jail, would not be good enough to trigger impeachment?
Absolutely not. I mean, I you know, look, impeachment is a political as much as it is a legal concept. And, you know, Nancy Pelosi and is nothing if not a savvy political player. She, like all Democrats, are haunted by the experience of Republicans in 1998 when they impeached Bill Clinton, knowing full well he'd never get removed from office, which turned into a political disaster for the Republican Party. They are not going to repeat that mistake.
On the other hand, Susan, I direct this to you. In the Watergate period, when things were getting bad, Republican leaders as well as Democratic leaders began visiting Richard Nixon and intimated that it was going to get a lot worse, and that was enough for Richard Nixon to step down. Do you see anything parallel happening here, or is Donald Trump just such a different figure that that's inconceivable?
Well, I think he's different from both. I would caution against overinterpreting the lesson of the Clinton impeachment as much as overdoing the comparisons to Watergate. And, you know, frankly, I do think people are making too much of Nancy Pelosi saying she doesn't want to do impeachment. She doesn't want to talk about impeachment right now. What is she going to say? If she wants to do impeachment, the last thing that anyone who supports it would want is for her to talk about it right now. Because the lesson here is one of process fairness. And if you prejudge a report that hasn't been filed yet, it's going to become even more impossible to convince anyone of process fairness. So I think it will all flow from the Mueller report. Jeff has set out extraordinarily high bar for that.
It seems like an impossible bar.
I think he has. And frankly, I think he is, as we all are to a certain extent, we've been marinating in this, and we have become inured to the shock power and the extraordinary nature of the facts that are already presented to us. And so,
well, isn't it true, Susan, that if a president had a single one of these investigations, like the New York State Attorney General's investigation or the Trump Foundation, and if any one of these things, which now seems so tiny in the grand scheme of things, or the investigation, journalistic investigations as done in The New Yorker and elsewhere into money laundering schemes in his business career, and there are countless things, that would be death to that presidency. And the truest thing that this president has ever said, so far it seems to be holding, I could walk down Fifth Avenue and shoot someone and get away with it.
Well, that's right. I think two things I would spotlight in terms of the gravity and seriousness of the allegations, and they're still allegations at this point, it's important to say that. Number one, literally the impeachment clause of the Constitution, I think, was designed by the founders with the notion of foreign interference in our political and government process. So the core allegations, were they to be documented in some persuasive way by Mueller and his investigatory team, I think would really get at the heart of what impeachment was designed for, number one. Number two, as far as the obstruction of justice, the president of the United States has already publicly admitted he fired the FBI director with the goal in mind of shutting down this investigation. He has apparently also said this repeatedly in his private conversations with aides and advisors as well. This remains an extraordinary fact. And so, you know, I feel that we, in a way, have become too blasé and sort of moved on too quickly from the hard-to-absorb extraordinary nature of the allegations that Trump is facing.
Jeff?
I mean, I think Susan and I really just disagree about the likelihood of this of impeachment proceeding in any way, regardless of whether it should. And I just add two more points to why I believe that. One is the transformation of the Republican Party. What doomed Richard Nixon was when moderate Republicans, including seven on the House Judiciary Committee, said, we can't do this anymore. We want him out of office. Those moderate Republicans do not exist anymore in the modern Republican Party. And the second factor is Fox News and the Republican media infrastructure, which is going to stand by Donald Trump regardless of what the evidence is. No, this is a
no, but
you know,
Chris Wallace or
network.
Shep Smith would, without being, you know, I'm not racing to the defense of Fox News, but even that is a complexity, isn't it?
Not really. No, I mean, look at Fox Prime Time. I mean, where most of the people watch, you know, Laura Ingraham, Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity. You know, this is a guaranteed base of support. And again, given the atomization of the news media, these people are not watching Walter Cronkite and then switching to Fox News. That's the only place they're getting their news. That's another aspect of the difference from the 70s.
Can I just I those are important and well taken points. But I think, you know, first of all, we've kind of collectively, you know, telescoped the time frame of that Watergate thing. That public opinion was a lagging, not a leading indicator of Nixon's fate. And in fact, those Republicans in the House as well as the Senate on the Judiciary Committee, up until 48 hours before that House Judiciary Committee vote, Elizabeth Drew was interviewing Republicans for The New Yorker, and they weren't sure which way they were going to go. The Republican leaders in the Senate, who in our collective memory get so much credit for marching down Pennsylvania Avenue to Richard Nixon and telling him to step aside as Hugh Scott did, that came only at the very end when it was clear his support had collapsed. Almost a third of the country remained solidly behind him through much of this. Even going back farther in time, Joseph McCarthy, when he was censured by the Senate in 1954, and that was the end of his red-baiting, you know, sort of reign of terror, there were 44 Republicans in the Senate. 22 of them stuck with him till the bitter end on that vote. So, you know, again, by the way, I should be clear. I am not saying that I believe for sure that this is where we're headed on impeachment. I think it really truly does rest on the nature and substance of the Mueller report, its findings, and how compelling and persuasive those are judged to be. But I don't rule out the possibility depending upon what's in that report.
Susan Glasser, Jeffrey Toobin, thank you. And we'll be back with more, I'm sure, in weeks to come. Thanks so much.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.
Washington correspondent Susan Glasser and legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin, both staff writers for The New Yorker.